All right, at this time, I'm going to introduce our first speaker. Actually, I'm going to introduce both speakers. Amy S. and Pat D. are going to go ahead and carry out the remainder of the meeting. And I go ahead and give you Amy S.
I'm not at the age where I get hot flashes, but I think I'm having my first one right now. First, I want to thank God and my understanding for allowing me to be here. And I want to thank Scotty P. for calling me when I saw your number come up on my phone a couple months ago when you called me. Something, you know, the disease in me says, oh, don't answer that. And but I did anyway. And when he told me why he was calling, you know, my disease says, say no, say no. You can have 100 excuses to say no, and they'll all sound good. But I didn't say no. And he said, you know, we'd like you to speak at a workshop. And I says, you know, oh, on what topic? And he said, well, I was really thinking of you for, you know, more God-centered, less self-centered. And I thought, oh, no. No, I can't do that. And I said, well, Scott, what are the other topics that you have? And he went through the whole list. And while he was going through the whole list, you know, like, I heard God's voice saying to me, you know, like, this is not about you. You know, you're being called to carry a message. So after I made Scott go through the whole list, I said, we'll just stick with the first one. And I'm really nervous. Every time I chair a meeting, I get nervous. But I always do the same thing that I've done since the first time I chaired a meeting at 6 months clean at Oakview Treatment Center in Ellicott City was, you know, I pray and I ask God to carry the message of Narcotics Anonymous through me. So I'm sure that's what will be done today. Just to qualify myself a little bit, I went to my first NA meeting on February 24th, 1991, and I have not found a reason to use since then. Actually, I take that back. I've had plenty of reasons to use. I've chosen not to. You know, I think it's, you know, God works in my life all the time, and I think that it is, you know, God acting in my life that I speak about this topic, because for the last 3 or 4 years, I've really been focused on, you know, my relationship with God and what that means. And earlier on in my recovery, I got to that point where I started feeling like, you know, this, like, force be with you, God, out there really isn't working for me, and I need something more. So I went on a little investigation, but I really didn't put my heart into it, and I wasn't committed to it. So at the end of my little investigation, I just decided that, you know, I'm not God, and that's all I need to know, and that's good enough for me. But then about 4 years ago, I got to that same place again. And what I've learned in my recovery is whatever is presented to me, I either take the time and the commitment to face it now, or I will face it again later. And even if I do face it now, I still may face it again later. So I got to that place again, and I decided that, you know, okay, I know the drill. I don't want to go through this process again. And I started, you know, on the journey of finding out, you know, what the God of my understanding is. And I'm going to quote some things out of the book. You know, I did prepare a little bit just by reading our basic text, which is, you know, full of great information. And some of this stuff, I think I never read it before, but I know I have. And this is in the preface of our basic text. At the end, it says, therefore, with gratitude in our recovery, we dedicate our NA book to the loving service of a higher power, that through the development of a conscious contact with God, no addict seeking recovery need die without a chance to find a better way of life. We remain trusted servants in gratitude and loving service. I read that a couple of months ago, and I thought, when did they put that in there? through the development of a conscious contact with God. I don't think I ever read that before. And if I did, I wasn't open to it. You know, and if you read in our basic text and you listen to our readings, you know, it talks about the core of our disease is self-centeredness, and that is the spiritual part of our disease. And it requires a spiritual solution. I think we even have a workshop that talks about that this afternoon. You know, so I spent a lot of time in my recovery trying to stuff that spiritual void with other things, you know, with shopping, with credit cards, with relationships, with, you know, soap operas, with dances, hanging out, you know, whatever, just, you know, busyness. And that's why I came back to that place again where I really needed to do something. And I knew, you know, I knew that, like, I'm here for a greater purpose than what I just think I'm here for. And in the basic text, on page 53, and what can I do, which I really, my thinking is they should have put this at the beginning of the book, but it says, developing the concept of God as we understood him is a project we can undertake. That sounds like a suggestion to me. That sounds like a command. That sounds like, you know, this is something that we need to do. And I'll never forget, I don't know how, I was pretty early in my recovery, but I picked up my one-day keychain at Search for Serenity on Thursday night. I had 4 days clean, and I was at that meeting with Mark D. And some other people. And I remember he used to talk about how the steps lead us to a relationship with God. And there was a time in my recovery when I did not want to hear that. And I sat out in the meeting, and I heard that, and I judged that. And I was completely closed-minded to any part of that. So I went on my way to work the steps, and my first sponsor, she used to laugh at me a lot because, you know, I would read the step and say, you know, well, I don't really have a problem with God, so I can just move on to the next thing, especially to my second and third step. And she would just laugh. And then she moved away, and my second sponsor said to me several times, you know, you really should revisit the third step because without a solid foundation of the third step, you're going to struggle in your recovery. Not me. Not me. I'm good. And she let me go on. And like I said, I got to that place a couple of times where I knew I needed something more. And what I found when I was reading through the basic text is that if you really read this carefully and slowly, the steps speak to us as if we are in the process of doing it, of doing the work. They speak to us as if we are it, that we've already said, okay, I've read it, this is what I'm supposed to do, and I'm doing it. And it talks about our relationship with God in that way. And it says in the third step, God, many of us understand God to simply be whatever force keeps us clean. The right to a God of your understanding is total and without any catches. Because we have this right, it is necessary to be honest about our belief if we are to grow spiritually. And I found two things, that it was necessary for me to be honest back then when I didn't really have a belief in a God of my understanding, and it was undefined. And today, that I do have an understanding, and God does work in my life, and it is defined, I need to be just as honest about that. And one of the things that I found is that if I'm going to make a commitment to go through the process to find out about this God and the God of my understanding, what I believe, I need to stay committed to it. I can't be, you know, a fair weather servant. And I've really been tested in that And I'm going to share an experience that kind of shows, you know, the test that I've been through with that. You know, when I was a young girl, I was very sheltered. I came from a good family, nice neighborhood, all that. But I was very sheltered. And I was lived in a controlled environment. My mother was controlling, so I'm controlling. So by the time I was like 15 years old, I had my whole life planned out. I was going to graduate from high school a year early, which I did, and I was going to go to NC State, which I didn't, and I was going to get married by the time I was 24, which I didn't, and I was going to have as many kids as I could possibly have by the time I was 30, because who wants to have kids over 30? Now, this is a 15-year-old's mind. Well, like, the only thing that happened out of that plan was the getting out of high school early. You know, I picked up and started using when my mother passed away, not long after she passed away. I was 12, almost 13 years old. And it wasn't any peer pressure. You know, what it was is I was snooping around in my brother's room and I found a big bag of weed, and that was the beginning of the end for me. You know, and I used until I was 23 years old, and I really, at that time, I had enough. And what always ended up happening for me is I ended up knotted up in a ball in a corner somewhere going, God, what is wrong with me? God, just don't let me wake up. God, why do I keep doing that? You know, so like I had a relationship with God. It was a gimme, 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 help me, help me, help me. You know, and by the grace of God, somebody that I had gone to high school with called me up on the phone, and I had no idea that they had 5 years clean in this program. And, you know, they proceeded to help me. And, you know, so that's where my journey started. So, you know, I got clean. I was like 23 years old. You know, all my plans were out the window. I had plenty of opportunities to try to, you know, make my plan out of what was in front of me, but I really didn't want to suffer a lot of consequences of things. And my sponsor told me early on, you know, you can do whatever you want as long as you're willing to accept the consequences. And, you know, I mean, I could have had who knows how many kids by now if I would have been willing to accept those kind of consequences. But anyway, so, you know, I stay clean for a while. I get married. I get divorced. And then I get married again almost 6 years ago. And I thank God for my husband every day. He is the greatest man, and he is the perfect husband for me. You know, and we start trying to have a family. And it's not happening. And I mean, we're really trying to have a family. To the point where this man says to me, a woman, you know, you're really taking all the romance out of this, having sex every night. I never thought I would hear a man say those words, but could we take a break, you know? And then I realized, like, I'm trying to control this. You know, this is what I want, and this is when I want it, right now. And I'm going to make this happen. And God, you just need to follow along with my plan. So I kind of changed the tune a little bit and did a few things differently and tried to act like I wasn't trying to control the situation. But really, I still was. You know, because I had to go out and buy the $350 fertility monitor so that every day it could be in my face. You know, and every day I could put the situation, you know, in my husband's face. So it really made it, like, really uncomfortable for both of us. And you know what it was like? When I did my sixth step and I listed all my character defects, my friend Bruce B. gave me this great idea. He says, you know what? Hang that list right up on your refrigerator so you can see it every day. And I did that. And I remember my sponsor came over after I had that list hanging up about 8 months, and she said, are you out of your mind? So that process that I was in was like hanging that list up on the refrigerator and having to stare at it every day. So we continue, you know, on in our lives, and we're still, you know, trying to start our family. And it's not working. And so, you know, we start talking to the doctors and blah, 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 you know, and you know, what do they know? And they know a lot more than I do. And we found out we didn't pay any attention in sex education whatsoever. Well, a little bit. But, you know, they told us the chances were slim. Now, by this time that they're telling us that, you know, I knew who my God was. And I had a relationship with my God every day, you know. And it wasn't that, you know, help me, help me, help me, or gimme, 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 or this is what I want. And it wasn't, you know, God, here's my plan, you follow me. You know, it was, okay, God, I'm here, I'm your servant, I'm going to completely surrender myself to you the best I can today and see what you have in store for me and know that you're going to give me the strength to get through it. And for somebody who is, I mean, I think all addicts are like controlling in a way, but some of us are really, really controlling. And for us who are really, really controlling, that, you know, to say that and commit to that and to, you know, like, white knuckle it through, you know, God's will is God, I'd rather like pull every hair of my head out with a pair of tweezers. But you know, but I kept trying to surrender, you know, and I know, because I could look back at my experience and all the time that I had clean, and I knew that when I got out of the way, things happened better than I planned for myself. And I knew that that was God's plan. And I knew that I had gotten here because, you know, of the grace of God. And so I tried to get out of the way. And through some prayer and through this beautiful process, you know, my husband and I conceived our first child. And it truly was a miracle. But then I lost that child. And I thought, see, God is good to me because I'm, oh, you know, I have a relationship with God, but I am constantly learning how he works in my life. See, I thought that because I surrendered and we surrendered, and we just let, you know, put this all in God's hands, that like, okay, now I'm going to get the reward. But I realized that, like, what I think is the reward isn't necessarily what God's reward is for me. And I'm still really learning that. You know, and I didn't just lose the baby. You know, I like bled internally for 5 days and was hospitalized and almost died. And I was really angry at God. You know, I thought, like, wait a minute, what are you trying to do here? You know. We're doing all the right things, and all the right things are supposed to happen, right? You know, no, not right. And one of the things that I've always said before that even happened is, you know, sometimes the things that happen to me are not for my benefit. Sometimes they're for your benefit or somebody else's benefit or so that I can give God the glory. But I had a really hard time remembering that through this. And then to make it worse, you know, like my best friend got pregnant right after that. And then I was really angry. But I knew, you know, I knew because I had done what this book tells me to do. You know, I took the steps. It might have taken me a long time because it's not a race and it doesn't matter. You're right where you're supposed to be. But I did search out and develop that relationship with God. So I knew, even underneath all my anger, I knew, you know, that like God has a plan and it's greater than what I can know. And I really wanted to quit then. I didn't want to get high. I didn't want to get drunk. I didn't want to step outside of my marriage. I didn't want to shop. I didn't want to lay on the couch and watch General Hospital for 6 hours. I just wanted to quit. You know, I just wanted to lay down and quit. And I knew that feeling because that's how I felt when I was using. So I knew that, you know, like this was the disease getting me. And I realized through the process and looking back through the whole thing that my desire to want to have a baby was as obsessive and compulsive as my desire to use when I was using. And some people don't get that. Like, I've shared that with some people, and they don't understand that, you know. But I know that, like, whatever area of my life, you know, like, the disease is going to get me somewhere. You know, and I just talked to you. I mean, I made it so unpleasant for my husband. He was like, give me a break, you know. So I was, you know, very obsessive and compulsive about it. And and, you know, this is the last thing that I was thinking I was going to share about. God always has a plan. So we made it through that, you know, and it's been a couple of years. And you know, one of the things that that's done is really brought my husband and I much closer, you know, and we were already great friends, and it's really brought us much closer. And it made me realize that having a relationship with God of my understanding requires a commitment. Of a commitment of no matter what. Like, you know, it's really easy, you know, to give God all the glory and praise and thanks when everything is going good. You know? But to lay in that hospital bed and say, you know, all right, thanks God for not letting me die. You know, that was hard. You know, to try to be, because, you know, of course, when you're going through something, it seems like everybody else around you, their life is just a bed of roses. You know, so it was really hard for me to, you know, like, muster up some humility and joy for my friends around me who it seemed like every other woman I knew was pregnant or about to give birth or just gave birth, you know. And, you know, and sometimes I managed to kind of like, you know, laugh at that, like, you know, okay. And stay focused on not giving in to the power of that and the power of the disease. And what I found with my relationship with God is the same thing I found with this process of recovery and the steps, you know, like, the more I read the book, the more I understand about my disease, and the more I understand about the process of recovery, the more, you know, meetings I go to, the more people I talk to, you know, the more I do what it tells me to do, whether I like it or not. And you don't have to like it. If anybody's told you, you have to come in here and get clean and you must like it, no, you don't. You don't have to like it. But if you want to live and you want to be free, you must do it. Yeah. You know, you must do what we before you have done. There's no other way. And so I know that as I go on, you know, in this process, and I continue to have faith, even though I don't want to have any faith, and I continue in the relationship, even though I want to quit, because you didn't go along with my plan. You know, I need to keep moving forward. I need to keep showing up and putting one foot in front of the other. And, you know, and It's been a couple of years since that happened, you know, and we're still trying. And and a lot of people had said to me and to us, you know, well, of course it's God's will for you to have a family. Oh, did he call you and tell you that? Because he hasn't told me that yet. And I have some great people in my life, you know, that have pointed out to me, you know, that I have a lot of spiritual children in my life. You know, and through my willingness to share the uncomfortable things, to share, because I'm telling you, if this would have entered my mind any time in the last couple of months, I would have really been this close to like calling Scott at the last minute and saying, man, I'm sick, because if I think I'm going to talk about that, I'm not doing it. But I know that anything I hear anybody share in a meeting or anything that I go through, somebody else, either they have, they are, or they will go through it. And I know when I'm sitting out there in a meeting and I'm going through something and I'm thinking I'm the only one in all the world to go through this thing. And if I found out the person sitting next to me had gone through it and didn't raise their hand and share about it, I would want to smack them. Because that's how we recover. That's how we get through things. That's how we get through the process. That's how one day at a time, you know, we manage to put another day together. You know, and it is true that, you know, pain shared is pain lessened. And we are about helping another addict, you know, and it is all about the newcomer. And it's funny because, you know, I heard some things on the radio this morning and it was just like right on time with this topic. And of course, I can't remember any of them, but I was like really lifted up and really inspired. And I knew that, you know, like this would be the meeting that it was supposed to be. And there's lots of ways that I could take my will back and that I could manipulate the situation or control it or try to, you know, I mean, you know how we do. Like we could tell ourselves the biggest, fattest lie and believe it and swear to it. You know, and I know that I can do that, and it's through God's grace that, you know, that I have that voice, and that through prayer and meditation, I do have a conscious contact, and I recognize that voice in my life telling me, you know, don't do that. Do this. Don't go here. Don't go there. And the longer I practice that, the more it comes to me. It's just like, you know, when I first got clean, you know, a friend of mine who helped me, he'd bring me to a meeting and he'd say, you sit right up here, right up front. And I would be really mad. And I would say, okay. And he'd say, and when they ask, you know, if there's any newcomers, you need to raise your hand and say, I'm Amy, I'm an addict. And I felt like saying, I'm Amy, and this is the dorkiest thing I've ever done in my life, you know. But the more I drag myself up to the front seat, and the more I raised my hand, and the more I shared when I didn't want to share, and the more my gut knotted up in a meeting and I knew I needed to share, and the more I picked up the phone and said, I'm Amy, I was at this meeting, will you be my friend? Because I didn't like doing that at all. I mean, I felt like I was five. But the more I did those things, the easier it became to do them again and again and again and again. And it's the same thing with my relationship with God. You know, the more I work at it, the easier it is. So I'm a lot further away from doing the destructive dis-ease thing to try to rectify a situation myself than I am to the letting go being humble, surrendering myself, and letting God be in charge of the situation. And knowing that His plan is always good. All the time. I'm going to wrap it up. There was one thing that I did want to read out of here, if I can find it. It's God's will for me to find it. I have a fairly new sponsee, and I don't know if she's here. I really hope she is, and if she's not, I'm going to make her listen to my tape. She heard me at my anniversary a year ago, and she was really, attracted to, she was really attracted to my relationship with God and my understanding, and she asked me to sponsor her. And she always says, why do they say I thank N.A. for my life? So, Stephanie, it's in the book, but it's probably not what you think. We received our recovery from the God of our understanding. I'm Amy, I'm an addict. Thanks for letting me share.
Hello, I'm Pat. I'm an addict. That's a great message, Amy. I really, I got a lot out of what you said. Anytime someone talks about themselves, that's a good Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I'm very glad to be here. I'm going to quote my childhood idol, Keith Richards. I'm glad to be anywhere. The life that we've lived to get to this place is a wonderful, wonderful miracle. Because most of us should be long gone. The alleys we hung our hats in, the people we associated with, and the things we did are not conducive of us being here. And if you're new, please think about that. Because you can leave here and be dead tomorrow. It's a pleasure and it's an absolute honor to chair any Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And Scott also wrangled me in, just like he did Amy. I have a longer tenure with Scott than Amy does. We used together. And we've known each other. I'm going to age us here a little bit, close to 40 years. Scott was a couple years older than I was. And I migrated to older groups. And when those guys were getting loaded in the late 60s, excuse me, Cindy, my wife. Well, thank you, dear. I'm very glad you're here. If there's anything else you want to have input on, just come on up here. My wife has been clean one day behind me. We're in our 10th year clean, and in the beginning, she used to be known as Pat's wife. Now I'm known as Cindy's husband. But anyway, Scott and I have known each other a long time, and they were a little older than me. I actually was in his brother's class, but I went right up the chain because they had better drugs. And it's because of Scott and Stan and the other men that I ran around with, that's probably why I'm here. Thanks, Scott. It was their fault. I am eternally grateful. Eternally grateful. God saved my life through this program. There's absolutely no question about that. To qualify myself for about 30 seconds like Amy did, I used narcotics for 27 years. If you want to know what I did, just pick up the literature, which is the most important tool in here, besides the guide of your understanding, and read the first step. Every single thing that happened to me is in the first step. I was institutionalized regularly. was incarcerated regularly. We grew up in an era of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Live fast, die young, leave a good-looking corpse, and that was what we wanted to do. The topic is very appropriate for me, and again, Scott knows me as well as anyone. And he wrote a little note in the card when he sent me the card, and he said, I'm going to be in that meeting, so make sure you don't lie. Because I was a pathological, habitual, compulsive liar. Anytime you asked me anything about me, I lied. Ever. I could be in the bar drinking and hit the lottery, which was an accomplishment, hit the number, which was an accomplishment in itself. And when I got back to the bar, I said I hit it 5 times. I would go to the Dundalk to cop PCP for our neighborhood because they didn't make any up where we lived. And I had robbed so many guys down there that they would whoop my ass and I'd have a black eye. When I got back up to my neighborhood, I'd say, I had to kick 3 guys' asses to get this bag of dope. So, lying was second nature to me. And Scott wrote in the card, make sure you're honest. And I prayed with my sponsor somewhere in the back there, Jimmy R. We prayed out front, and I asked God for honesty and humility. And to share a message that just can help someone new or old. The topic of self-centeredness and God-centeredness is very, very important to me because we in the sponsee family that I'm in, we work the steps with a sense of urgency. Amy made a comment that there is no race and there's absolutely no race between me and Amy or me and Scott or me and my wife or me and anybody in this room, but there's a race between me and a disease that wants to kill me. And that disease is never-ending, it's relentless, it's on the corner of the bed when I wake up, it's ready to go, it starts by telling me don't even get out of bed, because you have responsibilities today. The core of my disease is self-centered fear. And my sponsor banged that into my head. I'm from the old school sponsee family that he told me, get in the front row, sit down, and just shut up. If we want to know how to use, we'll call on you. And if I didn't get it that way, let me preface what I'm going to say today by whatever I say is my story. This is my experience, my strength, and my hope. And if I offend you, remember what the topic is here. Self-centeredness? Because I know when I was new and guys would be sharing stuff up here, I'd be hating these people. And they didn't even know me. So they weren't talking about me. I'd be like, what's that talk? Where'd she get off talking about? He means me. Self-centeredness. When I got in here, here's the scale in my life. Here's God-centeredness and here's self-centeredness. Boom! It's like this. Today, most days, it's like this. Some days, it shifts to this. Today, it's like this. Because I stand here with no fear, nothing, not nervous. And when I first got in here, I couldn't open my mouth. And my wife and Scott, I could not open my mouth. Because when the core of this disease crept up my back without drugs in me, it paralyzed me. And I couldn't get up to get a cup of coffee because I was so nervous that you were looking at me. Because I was an egomaniac. Stuck on self. I believe for me, the fear was built early by the defects of my character. I've always used this analogy that self-centeredness is the core of everything that's wrong with me. And it's like a big, dark, black witch's cauldron. And at the bottom is self-centeredness. And on any day, I can stir that shit up. And lust and greed and envy and resentment will fly out and consume my life. And as a young person, prior to using in the late 60s, as a young person, I did things that were abnormal. I did self-centered things. I stole. My sponsor told me something a long time ago. When I was a kid, I used to steal. He goes, and you know what? I knew it was wrong because I always hid it. Well, when you start hiding things, don't you think that's going to make you full of fear? And I hid my feelings. I hid my emotions. And I masked those with all these other people that I became through narcotics. I mean, we were hippies. We were bikers. We were preppies. We would be up in Towson in the preppy bars with needles in our arm in a bathroom. You know, I could be anything you wanted me to be. But I was constantly deceiving, manipulating, sneaking, lying, cheating, stealing, controlling, envious, resentful, greedy, violent. So if I'm those things, where's this coming from? It's coming from the core of this disease. And then you've add a bunch of narcotics into the mix, and it fuels that and fans the flames of that, and it covers up my feelings, and I don't have to think anything's wrong with me. And when I got here, my sponsor handed me the pamphlets. Read the Triangle Self-Obsession, read Self-Acceptance, and then call me and tell me what you read. I read them and said, I don't have any of that shit. I said, you mean all those people in that first meeting? I like Amy. Walked into Narcotics Anonymous on August 25th of 1998, and God has blessed me and I haven't used since. Which does not mean that if you've relapsed 15 times this month, I'm any different than you. I didn't have enough courage to come here. The book says in Relapse and Recovery, those that come back need to be respected for the courage that it takes to come back. And I tried to kick a heroin habit 100 times, 1,000 times. And didn't get clean. So I've relapsed a million times. But when Jimmy handed me those pamphlets, and I literally, were, the book says also, we're masters of self-deception. Not good at it or pretty good at it. The Masters is on this weekend. The golf tournament. Tiger Woods is the greatest golfer in the world. And he's playing in it. At the Masters. We were masters. That means we were the best at deceiving ourselves. And when Jimmy gives me those pamphlets and I read them and say, I don't have them, I said, I don't fear any motherfucker. He says, excuse me? I mean, I'm a gangster, I'm a this, I'm a that. I said, Jimmy, you've been clean way too long. I said, I go in the alley at 22nd and Kennedy in East Baltimore at 3 a.m. in the morning, and I walk in there and tell them brothers what I'm here to get. He says, and you're saying that's being fearless? I'd say, yeah, I'd say so. He says, I think that's being high and insane. Why don't we finish the convention here, and Sunday night at about 3 a.m., all of us take a ride down to 22nd and Kennedy. And if you ain't scared, then you're something wrong with you. Especially if you're a white guy. But you know what? You want to know how good of a master I was? The brothers I ran with? If I had a nickel for every time they said, you know my man Pat? He's a black man stuck in a white man's body. That's deception. I'm not a black man. I'm a white man. But when I needed to be a black man, I was a black man. I actually felt more comfortable being a black man. And so did Scott. I know he did. Nobody ever took us off. They thought we were right in the middle of the mix. So if I come here, and that is the core of this disease. And I'm going to say this from my experience, and I know it's going to ruffle feathers. This is my experience. Since August 25th of 1998, I have not taken my will back. Because my true will, is to get my buddy Scott, my wife, Her sisters are all clean here, and get in one of the cabs we used to grab down here to get to Salisbury. We'd be there in about 38 minutes, and I'd be in the hood copping a bag like that. That's my will. I'm not saying that I have not been the most self-centered prick on the face of this earth, but I need to believe in my heart and soul that, not in my mind analytically, because my mind will twist that. That way, if I ever get to that place, and I was at that place with prescription drugs because of medical reasons, where it was in my hand, and it was not enough because of the way it was prescribed, and I was taking them, and I was going to take them, and it was blasphemous to God's grace and protection of me, and because I knew that that line was so distinct that if I do that, I've spit in God's face. And it saved me once again. But my will is to use every day, all day, every night, burn up everything I got, ruin everyone around me. And I don't do that no more. For the most part. But like Jimmy said, the first couple months, just sit there and be quiet. Because it took me years to get out of the woods with this. I mean, in 2 years, I'm still telling that beautiful wife of mine, of we've been married 20-some years, and I was still telling her to go F herself on a regular basis. That was normal, right? That was protocol. I don't do that anymore. I couldn't get those words out. I could not do that because of the God-centeredness of this program. Relationships. Had none. Healthy. Not with my wife, not with my parents, not with my siblings, not with my friends. I mean, we ran together, but we were drug addicts. Angry, resentful, fearful, greedy, lustful, envious, jealous. Who the hell's going to have a healthy relationship with somebody with those traits? It don't work. I took from everyone. I was a taker. And I believe that fear, as I said earlier, was systemic from years of practicing the defects of my character. The book says very specifically, we finally honed our skills. The things we did, the way we got over, you couldn't do that unless you were good at that. And that is so far from God. And on August 25th, I know God's grace carried me through those alleys today. And on August 25th, those stars aligned just right. And God's grace was always with me. And I walked into these rooms. And Jimmy, my sponsor, who sits in the back, was chairing the first meeting that I went to. And I knew him from General Motors many years ago. And I haven't found a need to use since. And from that moment forward, I've tried to keep the scale tipping in the God-centered direction. It didn't work at first. I was still a pathological liar. I was still a thief. At a year clean, I called my sponsor up. I had a career. I had a job. I had a new Continental, black, bad, big trunk. And I went to buy flowers for our deck, mums. And I know the guy that owns the flower place. Used to drink in the bar with him. He had a ton of money. He was a rich bastard. And I resented him from day one. I resented anybody that had more than me. I resented people that had less than me. If you weren't me, you were out. So I walk in there and I say, hey, and I know the guy, so I'm going to get me a deal. He's got a little mum for $5. He's got the miniature mum for like $10. And then the monster jumbo mum is $48. And I need the big jumbos. So I go, hey, where's Jimmy? I figure I get a deal out of him. They go, you know Jimmy, this time of year, he's down in Florida playing golf. I go, that son of a bitch and rich son of a bitch and bastard. I said, well, he would usually take something off some of these if I buy five. They go, well, he ain't here. I go, so you're going to charge me $48? They go, yeah, that's why there's a price on the pot. I go, okay, so I wander around a little bit more, and then I just promptly open that trunk up. I said, I'll fix Jimmy's ass. Bam, in the trunk they go, five of them. Woo! Got a pocket full of money. Anger, resentment, self-centeredness. Where do I get off robbing this guy because he built a life for himself and wasn't a loser like me. So I called my sponsor up, Jimmy Reddy, Jimmy R., and I say, hey, Jimmy, I said, man, you're not going to believe what I just did. He says, what's that? He said, I said, I just robbed Watson's for some mums. I said, can you imagine me being up at the detention center with all those brothers telling them I'm up here to steal flowers? I said, I feel like a jerk. What? He goes, you're going to feel pretty embarrassed tomorrow when you go back to Watson's and pay for it. I learned some humility that day, and I went back and paid for them. The 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, and Amy alluded to the, and she used this specific word, must. There's this crazy thing that goes on in NA, because we're a bunch of nutbags, that's why. We twist things. And there are meetings, and if your home groups want, again, remember, self-centeredness, I'm not talking about you. If your home group, not you, if your home group says before the meeting, there are no musts in NA, that's bullshit. There was a World Service letter that came out with 47 musts quoted out of the books. You must go to meetings. You must get a sponsor to guide you. If you want to recover, you must work the 12 steps. Third step in the how and why, last paragraph, it says the only way to recover, and I'm quoting this verbatim, the only way to recover is through the 12 steps. Why would you come to a 12-step program and say, you know what, I'm going to go to meetings, I'm going to get laid, I'm going to hang around, I'm going to pray like a monk and a Buddhist monk, I'm going to socialize, I'm going to chair meetings, but you know what, I think I'll pass on those steps. It's a 12-step program. And only through the 12 steps did I learn through trial and error and an enormous amount of effort. Not, I debate this work thing. My wife says it in her sponsee family, and I respect her and love her and definitely don't want her to say anything again. So I respect that, but I don't find this work. I find me with no money and a $200 a day heroin habit work. I find sneaking into my mother's house at 38 to rob her one more time work. That's work. My sponsor told me if you put half the effort into copping and using that you put into the 12 steps, you'll be clean for the rest of your life. And through those 12 steps and the humility achieved by doing what we talked about, raising our hand high on Pat Amanak in the beginning, I didn't have any trouble with the first step, the addict thing. We aspired to be addicts. We did, man. We wanted to be addicts. Once you got down to drinking meth at 20 years old, you had arrived. You had got to be a senior in the drug world, you know? So that wasn't a problem. The humility came in to tell all you about how weak I was, because that's what I thought that was. Where I come from, there was no kindness. Kindness equals weakness. God-centeredness was weak. It was not even in my vocabulary. Didn't even know it. And like I said to Jimmy, I don't have that self-centered stuff. I didn't know what it meant. I thought I raised my son. My son's got 5 years clean. Thank God. And he gave us a beautiful grandson on Christmas Day a year ago. And I thought I raised my son, you know, properly, on a bar stool, in the hood, on Christmas Day in the hood. You know, as a 10-year-old kid, saying, I got to get out to see Mr. Eric, you know, son? I got to give him his present today. And I had a box wrapped up with nothing in it so I could go cop. You know, that's self-centeredness. My wife used to say to me right at the end, and it was bad at the end, and we would be down in the basement smoking crack. Thank God for crack. Because I could have perpetuated a heroin habit until I was dead, probably. My sponsor used heroin and whiskey for 35 years. He smoked crack for 3 months and ran into here and never even finished. And he's got 19 years clean. So my wife and I would be down in that basement. My wife would look at me and I would look at her and she would say, you know what? I'd say, Scott's got to get up to go to school. And she'd say, just put another rock in that can, honey. We're just those type of people who like getting high every day. F everybody else. And that was our world. And through the first step, some humility I achieved. Through the second step, I accepted a power greater than myself. I didn't do shit. At 60 days or 65 days, I remember Jimmy and I were together, and he said to me, we spent the whole day together, went to a spiritual brunch. He come drop me off. He says, did you think about using a day? And I honestly meant in my heart and soul, I could say, no, I didn't think about it. And I had an obsession to use every day since I was put my face in a bag of glue. That was humility. The third step is just a reaffirmation of the first day I walked in here for me. Because my will's to use. God saved my life on August 25th, and I ain't used since. The fourth step was a lot of humility. Telling all those perverse, deep, dark, sexual secrets. But I got some humility out of sharing that with my sponsor, and I've learned to get to a place now in my recovery where I can share any of that stuff openly in this meeting. The fifth step was humbling. The sixth and seventh step are the action steps. They take me to God. They bring me to God. They relieve me. Every time I love someone, every time I serve God, serve Narcotics Anonymous, and polite, nice, responsible, I take away a side of me that is self-centered. And that side dominates me. I wake up self-centered, ready to just be a self-centered prick. And I hit my knees every morning. I cannot tell you the last time I did not hit my knees in the morning and at night to pray with my wife. It took me 5 years to get in the same room with her. She was comfortable, I was not. Until one of my friends who's a biker, I mean a 1% biker, said he was down in a biker 1% meeting. And they were all high and messed up, and he had been clean for a lot of years, and his routine is to get on his knees with 40 of them in the motel room that they were staying in. And he said, F it, that's what I do. And when he said that, I thought, why can't I pray with my wife? And we pray together at night and in the morning. So I learned in the 6 and 7 step, those are the action steps. I got to live in 3, 6, 7, and 11. Action, action. I can't think my way into better living. I got to live my way into better thinking. And my thought process, there's something wrong with it. It's real wrong. Scott and I lived down this beach when we were using. Lived all down here. And when I come over that Bay Bridge, man, my disease likes to say, you ain't an addict down in Ocean City. Those were good times when we were young. And he was riding his bike up the boardwalk and the train would hit him and he didn't care. But he copped the lewds. We see a lot of lewds. For you young people, that's a quaalude. We used to actually shoot quaaludes. We thought that was a good idea to get some Percodans and some second-alls and two-and-alls and put them all in a big shot glass, get a big 3cc hype about this big, and see if you could get it in you before it coagulates. And if you miss, it would go, then you have to go to your job the next day in short sleeves, like, hey, got hit by a softball. That big knot on my arm. I knew that I had changed at the eighth step. Because when I first got clean, if you'd have told me to make a list of all the people I had harmed, I'd say, well, I can skip that step because I know I'm nobody. They all F me. Everybody. If you said to me today when you're done this glorious honor of sharing this meeting, if you said to me, go out and write an eighth step, I could make it in one sentence. Every human being I ever came in contact with. Because I'm self-centered. And at the eighth step, there were names. All of the names on the eighth step for most of us are the usual suspects. Mom, dad, sister, brother, wife, husband, children. We prey on those closest to us. But there were names on my list at the top that were men and women that I abused, that I thought that was what you did. And when I was not God-centered, I would say, oh, Tommy, F Tommy. He was my, you know, doormat. You know, I used certain people in your life. Tommy was real overweight, and he was the most loyal friend in the neighborhood. He never shot drugs. He just smoked weed. He still, as a matter of fact, God bless him, he still lives with his mother smoking weed at 54. So if you think pot's not a problem, weigh 400 pounds, live with your mother smoking weed, and tell me your life's manageable. But Tommy was a loving guy. And Tommy would go pick my kid up when I would leave him at a bar at 10 years old and go, I'm going to take the bartender, watch the kid, I'm going to go get some crack, and I'll be back in 5 minutes. I'd be back 2 days later. Tommy would go pick him up. You know, and I just figured, doesn't everybody have a big overweight friend they abuse? Tommy was like fifth on that list. That was God had intervened in my life and changed my thoughts and changed the way I saw this life. The ninth step was very humbling to make those amends. This is just a step, a whole ladder right up the humility ladder. The ideal, it says in the book, the ideal state to be in is one of humility. And all these steps have trained me and humbled me enough to achieve some level of God-centeredness through prayer, through action, and through living these steps in all my affairs. 10 steps, a maintenance step. That's humbling. You know, I don't want to do another 4-step. The insidious, sick, crazy, insane shit that was in the 4-step, I'm in my 10th year. God help me if I got to run another 4-step clean. Like that. Now, I know a lot of people that I respect that have written many 4-step. My mind's open to that. I haven't found the need to do it. My sponsor hasn't done it in 19 years because he told me that's why there's a 10th step. And if you've written it and you're getting better, who cares? God bless you. The 11th step is the culmination of all the steps for me. And I pray for knowledge of God's will and the power to carry it out. That's the prayer I say every morning. I have a routine that I'm in. And I couldn't ask for any power back unless I had accurately worked the prior 10 steps. When a new guy walks in and he's beat up and he's dirty and he's all wrung out and he's crazy, the selfish Pat says, F that guy. I'm Pat. I got my stuff together. Scotty told me and Jimmy told me years ago, because we all know how to talk, you can't be famous in an anonymous program. I mean, that is the most ridiculous. I'll tell you what, in the beginning, I hated these people that are famous in an anonymous program. Today, because of God and the 12 steps, I truly, on occasion, can feel empathy for them. Because it is absolutely pathetic that if you think there's some accolade to being standing up here to help some poor suffering newcomer. Society doesn't give a shit that I don't shoot heroin today. You think they go, oh, Pat, congratulations. You haven't robbed a drugstore in 10 years. Oh! Thank you so much. I mean, what is that? It's ego. It's self-centeredness. And I can get there. Believe me. I get asked to chair a lot of meetings because I can talk. And Jimmy always told me in the beginning, he says it every time he shares a meeting, the addict that develops the ability to listen is the one that's making it. All addicts can babble on. We're liars. We talk people out of all their stuff all the time. So the 12 steps have afforded me a luxury of living a God-centered life most of the time. If I leave God in the center of my life, all is well. There's days I leave my house to go to work and I feel like I'm floating down on a feather through the air. That's not often, but it happens. In the beginning, I couldn't sleep. Now, I didn't sleep for 25 days because of heroin withdrawal, but I mean, I didn't sleep for like a year, right? Why? Because I had so much guilt and remorse and shame that I couldn't go to sleep at night. I lay down in bed and there was 1,000 things that I did running through my head. That's why there's a fifth step. Leave it in the past. And don't repeat the past to create more guilt and shame while you're clean. The 12 steps has afforded me the luxury of living a peaceful, loving, respectful life with some true self-esteem. I'm in my 10th year. I'm up to low self-esteem, which is good. When I got here, I said to Jimmy, I said, I don't have any of that stuff. I said, he said, we'll love you till you learn to love yourself. I said, you ain't got to worry about me. I love myself too much. He goes, okay, just keep coming back. At 30 days, once the drugs were gone, and I'm like this. I didn't feel like I loved myself too much. It's taken a lot of change, not work for me, change, to learn how to love myself and to respect myself. And it's only through my predecessors that have done this, just like Amy said, the one way you got to do it. You got to regularly go to meetings. You got to live these steps and work them. You got to get guidance from a sponsor. And unfortunately, for those that don't believe this, you got to have a higher power. You got to pray to some higher power of your understanding. I don't care what it is. Can't be no light bulb and can't be that thing right there. That's just a cop-out. That's a bunch of bullshit. I mean, the books does not say God. Get in the back of the book. It says God all over it. If God saved my life through this program, why wouldn't I run to God? Why wouldn't I run to the steps? If a doctor said, Pat, you got diabetes, and if you don't shoot this insulin, you're dead, if I was sane, I'd crawl to that doctor's office. I need to nurture my spirit every day with a God-centered act. And it can be just like I said, just being, look, the book tells us everything. It says in the first step, it says, we reduced ourselves to animalistic behaviors. It says, this is the power of the group right here. 5,000? 5,000 people. I'll guarantee you that main speaker tonight, no one for a brief moment in time will think about using. Because the power of this group supersedes us alone. The group is the most important vehicle we can do. All the steps start with we for a reason. Can't do it alone. But you got to leave here and you got to go out there. And if you ain't using the most important tool, which is the literature, and understanding it, it's a text. It's not a novel like Gone with the Wind. Yeah, I read that. It was great. I read it about 9 years ago. Yeah, it was good. I can't remember what it was said, but you have to study this stuff. And I got a disease that when I'm reading it in the first 5 years, it's telling me I don't even have any of this. I got a disease that tells me, you know what? You're a real smart guy. You don't have to read it. Just scan it. And then tell Jimmy when he calls, man, that reading's good. I'm really getting the book down, man. It's really changing my life. Yeah, I love it. Well, what'd you learn the second step? Oh, that was a long time ago. I don't know. I read it daily. I read the literature constantly. Like Amy just said, she's been clean quite a while, and she read something that just knocked her off. Guess what? It's not because Amy didn't read it. It's because Amy's scale of self-centeredness from God-centeredness is tipped a little further, and she understands it now. Because the disease isn't blocking her mind. And the most glorious, the most important gift of the steps and the literature and the program is the freedom from active addiction, which then, more importantly, allows me to help the next addict. If I'm a self-centered, self-obsessed, which I am every day, how do I relieve myself of that burden? By helping someone else. That's the only way I get a reprieve from being self-obsessed. I can pray all day. I could go into a monastery and I'm going to stop praying and the thoughts are going to go right back to me. When God is in the center, something's in the center of your life. Trust me. When God's in the center of my life, all is well. I'm on that feather. When my work, my money, my cars, my credit cards, my clothes, my shit is in the center and I've moved God to the side, guess what the first warning sign is? Doubt. Fear. I don't sleep. Honey, I didn't sleep last night. Was it hot in here? No, it was like, because when we were using, we liked it like a coffin. Because when you use for 2-3 days straight, and you take that 20-hour siesta, you want it to be pitch black. Not a, if a light comes on, oh, and it's got to be below about 48 degrees, so that you almost freeze to get some sleep. And we still are like that. It's in the wintertime, we got the windows open. And I can't sleep. Honey, why can't I sleep? Well, guess what? Somewhere in that day, selfish Pat took God and said, you know what? I don't know any praise to God today. I'm putting my finances in the center of my life. God can take a break today. And then by the end of the night, I'm not even sleeping. How much money I got? How much money you don't got? Hey. I have had stuff, lost stuff, had stuff, lost stuff. What's the difference? How many people in here lost all their shit? And how many people that are clean and healthy and working a recovery program got all their shit back? And more. I've gotten 10 times more back. I don't care what people say it ended about the material thing. Bullshit. Don't tell me that. God doesn't want me to be a pauper. Because of the way I've learned to live, everything I have has gotten better. It means more, and I have more. You know when we started getting more stuff? When my wife finally said to me, we've worked the 6th and 7th step, why do you keep holding on to that bag of clothes in the garage? It doesn't fit you when you were like 12. And I go, I might need those shirts someday. She goes, you don't think some other poor soul might need them a little more than you? So we go in the garage and she says, come on, she had the bag. She goes, and I became paralyzed. She goes, she had a bag for the Goodwill. She goes, just try it. It feels good. Just take the shirt and put it in there. And I literally was like ready to throw up. I have a lot more nicer stuff. I don't want to. The 6th step says don't just purge your soul. It tells you specifically, go in your garage and clean that out too. Get rid of this death grip we have on the past. That's where we lived selfishly. And learn the way of the present where you can live God-centered. The 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the most important thing, God has saved my life. But my life is full because of service. My life is full. I do not know, and I've been in service at 4 months clean. I saw him in here, actually. Denny, one of my predecessors, got me into service at 4 months clean. And I've never not been. And I believe it's vital to my survival on this earth. You know, 2% are doing 98% of the service around here. It's unfortunate. It's the way it is. And this sounds selfish, but I don't really care because I'm in that 2%. I mean, I wish all you well, but it's your responsibility to freely give back what was freely given to you. So if you ain't serving, you might want to think about that. You got a sponsor, talk to them. They're probably not serving too. How about that? When water seeks its own level. But I have not seen, I'm not saying it doesn't happen, because this program, the craziest things happen. But I rarely see anyone with time that's in service. Very few times do the other people that's in service with me call up and say, hey, did you hear about so-and-so? They OD'd. When's that happening? Did you hear about so-and-so they used? It's very rare. And if that's an insurance policy for me to save my life and feel better about me and get some true self-esteem and actually get more God-centered, which I know is the formula to happy, joyous, and free life, then Again, we're self-destructive people. Why wouldn't we do that? It's insanity. It's a much milder form of insanity than going in the alley at 3 o'clock in the morning and pushing a pistol away saying, just give me the bag. But it's a form of insanity. And left untreated, it will grow and grow and grow. And God knows what can be the result of that. I ain't willing to take that risk. 60% of the time I go to Narcotics. You know what the most pristine form of service is? Going to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And being there for the new person that walks in. And being polite. And developing some social graces. And teaching them how to get better. If I don't regularly attend meetings, I'm shot. I am done. I don't mean I'm using, but I'm dangerous. And the God-centered part is way down here. You know, I travel a lot for my business, and if I don't stay connected, I go into other towns, and I'll go to dinner with a client, and there's a cosmopolitan that I never had one of. Never had a cosmopolitan. That shit looks pretty attractive. I think about using on a pretty regular basis. I never obsess about it. But I think I have, you know, people, I had a drug dream. I dream about, you don't even want to know what I'm dreaming about, man. I mean, I'm dreaming about shooting shit and nakedness and all sorts of shit all the time.
You're in the right place.
The only thing I tried, my mother and father at 5 years clean. Thank God I got clean because those people were the greatest people on the face of this earth. They nurtured me and they loved me and they put up with my selfish ass for all those years. My mother enabled me. Every time I'd get locked up, she'd bring her house over if she had to get me out. The court commissioner looked at her 1 year in Towson and said, Francis, why are you here again? He needs to sit and think what his freedom's worth. And she said, just tell me how I get him out. And when they died, when I got clean, I got to be the son they wanted me to be. And I got to take care of them, which was an honor for the last 5 years of their life, clean. And I went to their grave with no regrets and no remorse. Because that shit would have killed me, I'll tell you. If I'd have been used, and for those of you that haven't had that luxury, I understand the pain that can create. Because I sponsor some men that, you know, lost their mother when they were using. And it's just, you know, I would give all I have for 1 hour with my mother right now. I think about her every day. But it was only through the steps, and it was only through the program that I was able to become that son. It was only through being more God-centered. I can remember when I first got clean, and my wife remembers this crystal clear. I was at 45 days clean. I'll tell you this story.
Are we done?
I'll tell you this story, and then I'll shut up. Or are we done? There's no quick story in my story. I went to, I had started sleeping a little bit. My mother was checking in. Are you sleeping? Are you kicking that dope habit? She's 78 years old. She falls walking her dog on a Sunday night and thinks she broke her hip. She calls me and she goes, something's really wrong with me. And my first reaction, because I know how to work her, was to go, oh, you're getting ready to sleep for the first time. Yeah, I think I'm getting there. But that's okay, I don't want to bother you. I go, okay, what's wrong? She says, I think I broke my hip. I mean, this is how selfish I was. And she says, I'll just get the neighbor to take me down to hospital. Because my father had Alzheimer's and couldn't drive. God intervenes, and I went and picked her up. And I am pissing and moaning. I got to go to pick up my mother. Can you imagine? This woman gave me life and took care of me, carried me all those years. That's the disease right in front of me. We get into that hospital. It's a dark, quiet Sunday night at midnight. We get into that hospital. They put us in a cubicle, and she's so proud to have me there. And the doctor's like, oh, you got such a nice son, and I'm holding her hand and all this. And I hear over the intercom, I hear the ambulance say, she's at 80 over 40 and we're losing her. And they bring this addict in who's ODing.
and it's a chick. She's 18. And she's spitting and cussing, and you motherfuckers, and they're trying to restrain her, and they're pumping her with the shit, and they're trying to revive her, and they put her right next to the curtain where my mother and I are. My mother's arms are in my, literally putting blood out of my arms. I go, Mom, just take it easy. They'll straighten her out. And then in tow comes her mother.